Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry the podcast is late this week.
My fault.
No, it's my fault.
No, it's my
fault. No, it's my fault.
It's my fault.
Let's not quibble about whose fault it is. But we appreciate that you're inconvenienced. You should have got it on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. You're getting it on a Friday. So to make it up to you, we're making it a lot shorter.
That's so nice.
So that it's going to take up a lot less of what remains of your week.
Yeah. It could have ruined the rest of your week otherwise. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I had one of my incidents the day before yesterday where I needed the lavatory, and it was like it was, you know, like somebody had pulled the pin on the grenade.
Okay.
It was one of those.
Okay.
So I went into a pub, and the pub was empty because it was about 11 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I do get quite depressed by pubs which are full at 11 in the morning.
I was just thinking then, do they still open at 11 in the morning?
There's a pub near us. That's a well-known chain.
Okay.
I'm sure it's the one that you're thinking of.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
I think the founder might be... Oh, no, I'm getting him mixed up with somebody else, actually.
Okay.
I was going to say I think he might be a Rod Stewart fan, but then that's the founder of that plumbing firm, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Those guys, we've talked about those guys who look like Rod Stewart before, haven't we?
Don't know, have we?
Like every now and again, you see a guy who's very clearly modelled himself on Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is I think a lot of people maybe like take a picture of a celebrity to their hairdressers or, you know, see their favourite celebrity wearing something and think, oh, I'm going to get myself something like that. And you don't necessarily know, but when somebody's a fan of Rod Stewart, you just know.
Straight away.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Weller as well, I think.
Yeah, very distinctive.
Yeah. But anyway, it's not that guy. It's not the plumbing guy.
Okay.
It's the Weatherspoons guy. Why am I even...
I wasn't saying it either. Like, it was a secret. Yeah. I can't say it. He's obviously the Weatherspoons
guy. Yeah. Anyway, no disrespect to him on this occasion. But there's a branch of that pub close to us, which is full from whenever it opens from breakfast. And I've heard, you know, friends of mine say it's lovely. It's like a real lovely place in the community that hasn't been gentrified. And I have some sympathy for that. I also think if people, and I speak from experience as somebody who was once doing this, are drinking, you know, that far before midday, there's something inherently depressing about it.
11 o'clock, no.
Yeah, on a weekday. Maybe not. And not a bank holiday or anything. Just your regular old Tuesday.
If you're having a bottomless brunch, apparently that's all right.
That's all right. Yeah. Or if you're in an airport.
Yeah, oh God.
If you're going on a train. This is fine. But if you're in a Weatherspoons at 10 a.m.
There are rules.
And you're on your second pint. I do find it a little upsetting.
Yeah.
But no judgment.
Oh God, no.
Because I was that soldier, as I say, once upon a time. Anyway, this particular pub wasn't the Weatherspoons.
Okay.
So it wasn't busy at 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was completely dead. So there was no way I could get away with the going in and just going straight to the toilet without it being a bit uncomfortable with the bar staff.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was one of these pubs that had a sign in the window saying toilets for customer use only. So I wasn't going to ask if I could use the toilet, which I hate doing anyway.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to have to buy something here.
Mm.
So I went up to the bar and bearing in mind that the pin on the hand grenade, as I say, has been pulled. The clock is ticking.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, what's less? So I throw a Diet Coke. She then goes over to the gun thing and she starts pressing it and she's messing around. And it's just like everything is happening to make me think, oh, I'm about to soil myself here.
Then
she's like, oh, we've only got Cokes here. Fine. Pint or half pint? Oh, just a half pint. It's just like every do you want a slice of lemon in that? What about ice? Like, you wouldn't normally be asking these. This would all be in one question usually or no questions. And it's like, you know. So eventually I get this half pint of Coke Zero with ice and a slice. Didn't really want the slice, but I want to get it. And she said, okay, that's £3.80, please. Did you know that? For half a pint of Coke Zero?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I don't know. I bought a coffee today that was £5, so like I don't know what's going on.
Where were you, the Ritz?
I was in St. Catherine's Dock, so close.
What were you doing in St. Catherine's Dock?
Oh, you went for lunch. Yeah, I know.
Who with?
I'm a friend, Steph.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
You live in the life, a lady of lunches.
I know. £5 for a coffee. Yeah. I mean, Steph's tea was £3.80 for a cup of tea. One tea bag.
A cup of tea costs the same as a Coke Zero.
Yes.
Right, so anyway, so pay me £3.80.
Yeah.
And then I go and put the Coke Zero on the table. Mm-hmm. And then I go and have a rigorous bowel movement.
Okay.
I come out and I think, I'm not going to drink that Coke. I'm not going to sit in an empty pub and drink the Coke on my own.
Right.
I don't want it. At 11 in the morning. So I just left it there and kept on walking. And part of me felt wasteful.
Did you not even have a sip? You just didn't want it?
No, I didn't want it. Oh. I think, you know, as weird as it is drinking alcohol at that time, it's also like a weird time to be drinking a Coke.
Right.
And I thought to myself, okay, that's my price.
Yes, that's what I was just thinking. It was like you went to a private toilet, cost £3.80, and you would have paid that rather than do it on the street, right?
Yeah. And you know, like the market ultimately decides.
Yeah.
I thought maybe that is my price, £3. I'm willing to pay £3.80 to not soil myself.
Yeah. Do you wonder what she thought of you?
No.
No. Oh, okay, good.
No. Good. It's in a strange area.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I think it like gets a lot of drifters. I don't mean drifters in our sense.
Yeah.
I mean like in the American sense.
Yeah.
Drifters, strange people.
She probably didn't think anything.
Yeah. But I just thought, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
That I was happy. I didn't think, oh, £3.80. I just thought, that's fair enough. In an ideal world, and I have advocated for this policy before, every toilet would be a public toilet.
Mm.
Not in private residences, but if you've got a shop, restaurant, office building, anything, I believe that people should just be able to go and use your toilet. But it's not part of my 5-year plan to run for office.
Okay.
And certainly not high office.
Fine.
So I won't be enacting that anytime soon or lobbying the government for it.
No.
But that is... Although I have lobbied a member of the Shadow Cabinet for it.
I bet you have.
I recommended that it went in the manifesto and they've shown no interest. Mm. Yeah. Whereas I think it would be a real vote winner.
I think so too.
Keep saying you've got to give people something to vote for.
Mm.
Not just vote against, but vote for. Yeah. And I think that would be a vote winner. Anyway, it didn't really fall under his remit,
okay,
to be
enough.
Fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got the ear of some people.
You never know.
You never know. Anyway, so yeah, that was my first thing. Like £3.80, I think. Would I have felt the same about a urination? I'm not sure.
Oh, it's different, isn't it?
Yes.
Because I think, I mean, if I was that desperate, I mean, I'd pay up to £20 rather than soil myself.
Yeah, but you'd resent paying £20.
I see.
I can let the £3.80 go.
Yes.
I think I could... I think if it hit £5, that's the point at which I'd start to feel resentful.
Okay, so £5 for that. For a wee, what are we talking then?
I don't want to spend more than £2 for a wee, but what can... If a Coke is £3.80 these days, and I'm not somebody who spends a lot of time in the pub, but if a Coke is £3.80, what hope?
Mm.
What hope have you got of ever spending £2 to urinate? Yeah. Which is why I will be doing it in the street from now on.
Good. Like your wife.
How far into this are we? Shall I give you something else?
Come on then.
Annabelle sent me a couple of clippings and this one caught my eye. It's from The Guardian. Colin Firth's wet shirt from Pride and Prejudice sells for £20,000. Now, bear with me a second. For anyone who's interested, that is 5,263 bowel movements.
I was interested. Yeah.
But more than that, I am so surprised it sold for so little.
So little, really?
Yes. Do you not think?
No, not really.
So do you know what year that film came out?
Oh, 93?
Yeah, probably.
I okay. Guess. I thought you'd
I haven't got the article in front of me, but that sounds about right. Yeah, yeah. And the fact that it stayed wet for that long, they could solve drought. Everybody in the world could have water just by wringing that shirt out.
Wow.
This is amazing to me.
It is amazing.
So what a steal someone got it for, £20,000.
Very pleased for them.
How's it looking in the inbox from the, you know, the email we get from the Drifters?
Oh, yeah.
Have we got some?
We have, yeah.
Should we have a listen to some of it?
The first one I'm quite excited about because we've got something that happened to do with the live show.
Ah.
We haven't had any kind of live show stories yet, have we?
No, we haven't,
I believe
yeah.
This is our first.
Well, maybe we should hold it over and then we should do a live show when we read out stories from the previous live show.
Yeah. So this is from Neil and he says, I have a trio of awkward things that happened on the day of the tricentennial. The first was coming off the Metropolitan line at Liverpool Street. I was stood by the door with a girl as the train came to a halt. We waited a moment and the light appeared on the button, but the doors did not open. I reached for the button and then suddenly remembered that tube train doors should open automatically. I am more used to the overground and trains outside of London where the button needs to be pressed. So I pulled back my hand and the doors remained shut. For some reason, the girl looked at me annoyed, I guess thinking, why did he go to all the effort of reaching out to the button and then pull back at the last minute? So in a split-second decision, I decided to reach out again and press the button. But by then, the girl already had her finger on the button. So I ended up pressing quite firmly the end of her finger. She shot me another annoyed look. And thankfully, the doors then finally slid open. Totally mortified. Is the Metropolitan line trying to sabotage me? Why won't it conform to the rules of all normal tube trains?
Hang on. I don't understand. Like, so the Metropolitan line, do you have to press the button?
Maybe you did on this occasion. Maybe you do. It's the line I go on the least.
It should be standardised, though, across all the different lines. It shouldn't be that on some of the trains that you have to press the button, and then on most of them you don't. It should be one thing for all of them.
I wonder if it's a coincidence that she pressed the button at the same time the doors automatically opened.
I don't know. I just think TfL would be better putting this is Transport for London, by the way, putting effort into standardising that rather than, you know, coming up with the clicktivist line.
They've
made new names for some of the lines, haven't they?
Oh, yes.
The feminism line.
Mm. Is it called the suffragette line?
Look, the suffragette line, I don't mind. Okay. Some of them, it's just a bit on the nose. It's not that I've got any objection to the sentiments behind them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just some of the names.
Mm.
There's a lack of poetry.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
I support, like, Weaver Line, I can get behind that. Mild May. Here's what I want. I want to have to dig to find out what the underlying sentiment is. Just not, I don't want to dig very far.
Yes.
Deep. I just want to go on
two
a Google.
Two layers.
But I don't really want to travel on the kindness line or the anti-racism line.
Yeah.
As much as I support those sentiments.
Of course. I totally agree. Okay. Second incident. In a moment of extreme bravery, some of the Adrift Facebook group members decided to meet up at a nearby pub before the event.
Thanks for the invite, guys.
This surprisingly seemed to go without story or incident, although I may be wrong and there might be incoming stories from others. But from the walk from the pub to the venue, I was talking to a lovely fellow drifter and she told me that she was a teacher. I said, oh, yes, that makes sense. You have teacher vibes. She went quiet and said, oh. I quickly explained it was a good thing as opposed to having, say, I don't know, banker vibes or arms dealer vibes. I still worry that she thinks having teacher vibes is a bad thing, which it is totally not.
No. Unless it's like Mr. Bronson or Mr. Baxter?
I think there's a slight hint of, like, you seem a bit strict.
Like Mrs. McCluskey.
Authoritarian, yeah. Yeah. I think there's a slight hint of that. I don't remember if the conversation recovered from this, as my mind was then scrambled and working in recovery mode. Oh. I'd love to hear from that teacher to see, like, if they were offended.
Yeah, I think I'd like to be told I'd teach a vibes.
Yeah, I don't see it as an insult, but I think maybe the quietness came from them trying to process it and being like, what does he process it? What does he mean by that? Does he mean I'm strict? Does he mean I'm like Mr. Brunson? Mm. I think that's probably that. The last drifter moment, other than misleading Annabelle with my enthusiasm for a wrong answer quiz question, remember it well, and having to make small talk with Jeff during the show, thankfully edited out, was a very classic me thing to do and likely a general drifter thing to do. After bottling out going to speak with Jeff and Annabelle after the event, I grabbed a drink at the excellent venue bar and sat with some of the drifters I'd met in the pub until it was time to get my train back. I said my goodbyes to my new drifter friends and I left the main room, went to the toilets and then headed down the stairs that we'd come up when we entered the venue. A printed exit sign was helpfully showing the way during the descent. When I got to the bottom of the stairs, I was faced with a closed fire exit. I lightly pressed the bar on the door. Nothing. I looked around for another door, definitely no other exit. Walked back up a few stairs to see if I followed the exit sign incorrectly. No, I definitely went the right direction. What to do? Wait until someone else comes down? No, I would look like an incompetent fool. Go back up to the bar? No way. I'd not only have to come up with a reason why I actually wasn't leaving after all, but I was also at my maximum dose of people interactions. So what did I do? Went back to the toilets. Sat in a cubicle for a few minutes while my mind reset and then tried to leave the building again. This time, I fortunately opened a green button next to the door. Push this and the door magically swung open.
I think sometimes people deliberately make those green buttons hard to find.
Oh, they always. I think they always make it hard to find.
Yeah. Green also, that's a colour that's used in camouflage.
But it tends to be more of a brighter green. Than
no, but not like luminous. It should be luminous. It should be lime green.
Yeah. They're making us suffer. Yes. Do you love his reset? I love his reset. That he went and had a reset.
I understand.
Started again.
I have a little trick for you. Mm. So what I would have done in that situation is I would have waited there, but I would have waited there like typing something into my phone and looking annoyed. Like I'd got an urgent work thing that I was dealing with.
Right. Yeah. Do you think anyone ever falls for that?
Yeah. If you see someone like looking annoyed and doing something on their phone, you think, oh God, I wonder what's come up there.
Yeah.
There must be a meltdown at the nuclear power plant or something, and they're dealing with it.
Yeah.
So there's my little hint for you.
Okay, great. Right.
That was wonderful.
It was. That was lovely. Let's move on to Stuart Leatherhead. Just thought I'd share an incident that happened a few days ago before I banish it from my memory for good. I had a ticket to see friend of the podcast, John Kearns, at the Leicester Comedy Festival.
I'm going to see him soon. Have you?
I went and saw him recently, yeah.
This most recent show?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah,
he's the best, isn't he?
So funny. At the time of booking, I was aware of the dangers of sitting close to the stage at a comedy show, but figured what's the worst that can happen? Imagine my horror upon entering the theatre and seeing that the front row was only 10 seats wide and I was dead centre. I spent the whole show in dread of an interaction with John, and by halfway through the show, he had already asked questions to 6 or 7 of my fellow sitting ducks. It was inevitable, wasn't it? Now, lucky for me, most of the interactions have been met with silence, long pauses and awkward exchanges, so I wouldn't be the first person to stifle the show. Well, that's what I told myself anyway. So with 10 minutes to go, it happened. His eyes met mine and he walked my way. How old are you, mate? He asked. Oh, good, I thought. I know the answer to this. 48, I replied confidently. Then he asked, have you ever seen the snowman? Or was it, have you ever built a snowman? For those that don't know, John does his set wearing a tonsure wig and comedy false goofy teeth. This can sometimes lead to mishearing words. However, I could confidently answer yes to both questions. But then, through a combination of thinking, move on, please move on, and panicking over the situation, I'd failed to hear his follow-up question clearly. Something about how does it start? Did he mean, how do you start to build a snowman? Or, how does the film begin? After what felt like an age, and with over 200 people waiting for me to speak, I bit the bullet and explained how you start with a snowball and keep rolling it to get bigger. Abort, abort, I told myself as I could see visible confusion growing on John's face. After another pause, I meekly asked, do you mean an actual snowman or the film? Still looking confused, he indicated that I should go on with the Raymond Briggs classic tale. In an attempt to save face and trying to give an amusing response, I said the following. Boy wakes up, sees the snowman, builds a snowman, goes to bed, bosh. This drew a big laugh from the audience and clearly threw John, who wasn't sure where to go from there. Eventually, he moved on and picked on someone else. At the end of it, I wasn't sure whether my answer had saved me from my previous embarrassment or made it worse. But one thing is for sure, next time I go to see a comedian, I will be right at the back amongst the shadows.
Ah, I mean, it's a funny thing, because I mean, what's worse than having to join in? But I think you are very safe with John.
Yes.
I once asked him about it. I said, like, when you're picking somebody, like, how do you know that it's the right person, whether they're going to be a nuisance, whether they're going to derail the whole thing? And he says, oh, I can just tell if so. He's looking for a certain type of lovely. I know this, and I'm not just saying this to make you feel better. He's looking for a kind of loveliness in someone's face.
That is so nice.
Because he won't, because he knows that some people are just trouble or they're going to build their part up or get gobby. And he's trying to look for somebody who just looks kind and nice.
I hope no one's listening who's once sat in the front row and hasn't been picked on out, because now they know that they look like trouble and they don't have a kind face.
Maybe that would be a good topic, actually, the time that you were forced into interacting in a performance.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Sorry about that. A bit short of breath today. Mm. The email address is hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Annabelle?
Yes.
How's your Substack going?
Oh,
I haven't read that last week's yet, I don't think.
What was that? So this week's one is it's quite niche, really, but it's all about the pillow. It's pillow talk.
How is a pillow niche? I don't think I know somebody without one.
Okay, I would agree that the pillow itself isn't niche, but maybe writing 800, 900 words on it is a little bit unusual. No?
You know.
No?
You're playing phone naive.
Phone naive. Go on.
You know that the key to the universal is the specific.
Oh, I see.
You know. This is like people, this is going to be good. I can tell already. Wow. Like your thoughts on the pillow. You're going to be writing all these things that's like, oh, I've always thought that, but I've never heard anybody say it.
That's what
loud.
You want someone to think when they read your bits, don't you? So, yeah. So the pillow. Last week, I can't remember it's last week, but maybe I mentioned it last week. Yeah. So the pillow, annabelleport.substack.com. Just Google me, really. You'll find it.
Okay.
And subscribe. If you want to pay as well, it's only £2 a month. That's a bargain, right? £2.
Yeah.
You could get like one bowel movement, like just under one bowel movement in a pub for that.
Like half a bowel movement.
£2.80.
No,
yeah.
£3.80.
£3. £3.80. So yeah. I was right first time. You could get two bowel movements in a pub for that.
I mean, almost.
Almost.
You're a little bit short.
Yeah.
But.
yeah. So, you know. Please feel free to subscribe. Subscribe.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe. I can't say subscribe. You can subscribe for free as well. You don't have to pay. It's optional.
No, but here's what it's like.
Mm.
If it's like going to a food market, what they call like a street food market or something like that, and they've got samples.
Mm.
Have a sample.
Yeah.
But if you like it, this is what I want you to do.
Mm.
Don't just keep going back and getting more samples.
No.
Buy something if you think,
yes.
I like what this person's serving up here.
Yes. And I tell you what, I'm having such a lovely chat with the people, so you can comment if you're paying. I have such a lovely chat with them in the comments. I really enjoy it.
Oh, no, Annabelle, don't do that.
What? Why not? It's so
don't
nice.
Engage.
Oh, I love it.
Don't engage.
We had a wonderful chat about pillow this week. I loved it. It's been
really?
Very interesting. You get a water pillow and a buckwheat pillow. I didn't even know about these things. Very exciting. This is what you're missing out on.
Yeah. Yeah, people criticise capitalism, but Buckwheat pillows, water pillows.
Oh, amazing.
All right. Do you have another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult?
Yes. And I'm going to start with something quite exciting because I've got an update on the water cooler situation.
Oh, God, I'd forgotten about this.
Oh, I hadn't. So I revealed last week that Tom had told me he's getting a water cooler for our home, for our flat. Even every time there's a knock on the door, I fear that it's arrived. And what I really fear is that even though we've got no room for it, I fear that I'm going to grow fond of it. And then that's it for the rest of my life, a water cooler in my home. Anyway, following on from this, we got an email from Hannah, who used to work in a water cooler company, and they had one celebrity customer, Peter Andre.
Pondre.
And he was very lovely on the phone.
I'd expect nothing less.
Me too. She says that most customers are obviously offices and factories, but probably about 5% are domestic customers, such as our lovely Peter Andre. He's got a water cooler in his house.
Wow.
Yeah, but he's probably got a gym in his house.
I'm imagining his house is very different to yours in terms of size. I think your house is lovely.
I think he uses old hotel slippers to keep doors open as well. They get increasingly dusty. I can't see that it would be any different to mine. Most of the people who have them are elderly ladies, which I find interesting. And she writes, because the little domestic coolers only hold the smaller bottles, we didn't tend to send the burly delivery drivers with them. So there might be more people having home water coolers since the work from home revolution. But basically, yes, it is a bit strange.
So who is bringing the water then? If it's
less burly people.
Oh, I see.
Less
so, are we revealing a secret here? Have we blown the lid on the water cooler industry? Mm. The more water you're buying, the hunkier the delivery.
I'm
going to
make sure we get a massive one. Mm. 50 litres. Is that a lot? I don't know. The thing is, she also says, in my experience, the most fun small talk you can have with the staff at the company would be, can you fill it with champagne next time? Because I'll never have heard that one before. And now
we should do some of those. We've not done for those for ages. What is the joke about your job that people never get tired of, but you have long since grown very, very tired of?
And now all I want is a water cooler so I can make that champagne joke every time they turn up with it. Every time. I'm so excited about doing that. Okay. So moving on now, I've got a painful experience to share with you. Do you remember that I mentioned I was doing a talk at the baby show?
Yes.
In connection with my side hustle, my baby products website. So
at least hustle by then saying the name of the website.
Getgetgot.com.
Right.
Or as I heard someone say it at the show, someone in the press was, Annabelle from Get Go. Which is also what my dad calls it. Get got. So the talk itself, which I did last Saturday, obviously that was just terrible. I don't even want to talk about that.
Annabelle, I'm sorry. You're so good at those things.
Let's just not talk about it. I want to tell you.
I blame the audience. I use that sentence quite often in this house.
I want to tell you about something that happened before the talk. So the show opens at 10 a.m. It's at the XL Centre in London.
The Extra Large Centre.
Extra Large Centre. XL.
Oh, yes.
I'd never been there before, although I do remember when I first had COVID, it was right at the very start of the pandemic, and I was quite ill and my breathing wasn't right at all. And it's before we knew anything about COVID, apart from the talk of bodies piling up. And they announced that the XL Centre would open as a temporary hospital. And I remember lying in bed and feverishly thinking on repeat, please don't let me end up in the XL Centre. Please don't let me end up in the XL Centre. And then here I am. I've got there early. I'm having a little walk around, checking out the stage where I'll be talking. I have a little chat with the stage manager who's got my slides. It's my first ever slideshow. And I don't think he was very impressed when I said, I'm going to have a clicker, my first clicker. And I'm wondering if I looked a bit amateur hour. Maybe that made me a bit flustered. But anyway, I went on the stage to check if I could see the screen for my slides from where I'd be sitting, because it didn't look like I could. I say less, it's less of a stage, more of a platform. Mm. And a woman approached me. And she spoke very fast and very mumbly. That's my excuse in early. And I heard at the start that she worked for Tommy Tippy. It's a baby company. And so my brain...
No, it's a person who owns a baby company, right?
What, you think that's their name?
Yeah.
Mr. Tommy Tippy.
Yes.
Right, okay. So my brain is already thinking, oh, she's going to ask me to mention a product, because that had happened with some other companies. So while I'm thinking that, I can now hear her saying something about a photo, and she's holding a phone up like at me. Now, obviously, there's no reason at all why she'd want a photo of me. Even if she knew I was giving a talk there today and there was nothing to indicate that I was giving a talk there today, there is no reason she'd want a photo of me. So there's no explanation at all why I said, oh, do you want a photo? Do you want a photo of me? Because of course she didn't. She wanted me to take a photo of her on the stage. Oh, God. We laughed about it, though, while I ran through ways I could end my life in the next few seconds. And I hate taking photographs of other people. It's just so, I'm so bad at taking photos. So I end up taking too many to compensate. Like 100 bad photos is better than one bad photo. So I'm never going back to the Excel again. I'll probably have to close down my website. No other way forward, really. Get go!
All right, let's jump straight into Quandary Corner here at the GLAP Clinic in Problematic. Let's see what we can do for you in terms of thrashing out some rules for social etiquette.
Okay, first one is from Helen. I have recently joined a drama group. I know what you might be thinking, that it's not a very dritterish hobby, but I disagree. I enjoy weekly social interaction where I literally have a script telling me what to say. That makes perfect sense.
It's like me and karaoke.
Yes. Everything has been going well except for one event looming in the next few weeks, which I'm feeling so stressed about. Everyone in the show was required to do one morning of flyering, handing out flyers for the upcoming show to the general public. I cannot think of anything worse than trying to persuade busy morning shoppers to come to an amateur drama performance of a Victorian farce. I've done this once already for the previous show, and it was a nightmare. Having to approach people who do not want to be handed a leaflet and trying to sell a show is not my idea of fun. Obviously, the group is sort of the least driftery people I've ever met, who are happy to theatrically proffer a flyer and wax lyrical about their show, but not me. So, what should I do? My initial thought was to dump all the flyers in the bin, but we'll be in pairs, so that's not possible. My other thought was to call and say I'm sick, but there are four concurrent Saturdays allotted for flyering, so I'll just be made to do a different day. Is there a way to get out of it, or is there a way to make it more bearable? My only saving grace last time was that I offered a flyer to one person who looked panicked and said, I can't, I'm a hairdresser, and scurried off, making me think that at least there are other drifters moving around the world.
Okay, here's what you do.
Okay. Oh, I like this. Go.
You have a little routine worked out with the, you're in pairs, right?
Yeah.
So the other person does all the talking to people and all the acting, and you pretend to be stuck in a glass box.
Displaying your skills, making people more excited about going to see the show.
Yep. And they've got some funny banter about, I'll only let them out of the box if excuse me, I'll only let them out of the box if you come to the show. Yeah.
And so all you've got to do is sort of be silent, mime.
Yep.
And like, it's really fun pretending to be in a box.
Oh, yeah.
So fun.
Yeah.
Should we just move on?
I think so.
Okay. Imperial Queen Eileen. We live on a pretty boring street on a pretty boring estate of red brick modern Georgian style houses. I confess to being a little nosy when the indoor lights are on. Who isn't? And that's me, said who isn't. And the curtains are open.
Oh, it's my favourite. Oh. I said this to someone recently. My favourite time is like the hour after dusk, after the sun's gone down. And then you go for a nice walk. And people haven't quite remembered to close the curtains yet.
But they've got the lights on.
Yeah, and like people are coming home from work and they're starting to just relax and maybe having their dinner. And you just like, you know, I'm not saying stand and gawp.
No.
But take it in as you're walking past.
Take in as much as
peeping,
you possibly can.
Peeping.
I love it. In a nearby house, I have been admiring recent work. The occupier has had understairs cupboards built in. I have the owner's mobile number, as after a recent storm, seeing she had ridge tiles replaced, I knocked in desperation for a local tradesman to ask for the roofer's contact number. All good that time. We were fixed and we swapped a brief exchange on text. I've kept the lady's number in my phone. It is the same house where I am liking her choice of storage, and took the plunge last week to send a carefully worded message. I have been admiring your understairs cupboards. Can you tell me who did them, please? There has been no response.
Yeah.
What to do next? Major dither. Help. I have to pass by daily as it's the quickest route and saves a slightly longer route around the houses. I have done a discreet sideways glance and see she is leaving the Venetian blinds down at all times. Oh. Have I got the reputation of a nosy neighbour?
Yeah.
Do I...
Worse than, really. Oh,
do I convince myself she's changed her phone number and I didn't get my message?
Nah.
Do I adopt the port protocol? Moving is not an option. We currently have an extension built. And that's another daily ordeal, exchanging pleasantries with the builders. So far, I've managed to avoid any embarrassment.
Could you go on a kibbutz?
Can I check one thing with you first? Do you think... I mean, all the evidence points to the direction of the answer being yes. Do you think they've taken offence that you've been nosing through their window? They are ignoring your message and they're now closing the blinds to avoid any more nosiness.
Yeah. I mean, you could try and put a positive spin on it and hope they've had a recent bereavement.
That's very positive.
And then, you know, they're not thinking about replying to your text message because of some other terrible life put circumstance.
And maybe that's why they got the blinds down.
Yeah, because they're just sobbing.
You know what? There's always another story, isn't there?
Yeah.
You think it's about you and it never is.
Yeah, but be honest. Mm. Like, if I suspected somebody was, like, rebuilding their house to be identical to mine bit by bit.
No.
Yeah, because that's what it sounds like.
No.
It's like it started with the roof thing and now this is, like, making a Frankenstein's monster.
Can we ask a question? Did they also have an extension bill recently identical to yours? Oh. Can I ask another question of you? Would you be offended if someone did that to you? Or is this neighbour overreacting?
Oh, I wouldn't care. But,
So really...
We're better than this person, aren't we?
So let's do some person blaming. If they have taken offence, they're pathetic and oversensitive. Mm. So let's not worry about them.
Yeah. I don't know if you have a dog, but you could start just... Yeah, after you've picked up after your dog, putting it through the letterbox.
Yeah, in the middle of the night.
Yeah, maybe some... But I always think it'd be fun to make a poison pen letter out of pages. You know, because the newsprint is dying as a medium, isn't it? And who knows how much longer it'll be around. So, you know, you might not have that many more chances to cut letters out of newspapers.
And it could spell out... I like what you've done with under your beds upstairs. Could you tell me who did it for you? Oh, yeah. Okay, so do that. Great.
Oh,
okay.
What would be the creepiest thing to say? I like what you've done with your shower curtain.
Ooh.
I've got some thoughts about your shower curtain.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go. Kibbutz, I think. But port protocol, some combination of kibbutz, port protocol, and then blaming them.
Yeah, I think so.
And launching some kind of campaign of terror.
Yeah.
If you have one of these, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening. Send us your quandary, because we can sort it out for you, as we just proved yet again this week. Any social dilemma, not knowing the rules, not knowing the etiquette, we know them.
Oh, yeah.
We're like Debrett's, me and Annabelle. Mm. So, yes, email with that. Also, your stories of social ineptitude. And we would remind you that in addition to the usual social awkwardness stories, anything involving the tiresome jokes people make about your job, not done that for a while. And Drift has been dragged into interactive performances. That email address is hello@adriftpodcast.com. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music, and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took our photos. Kim Rainey designed our artwork. And boy wakes up, sees snow, builds snowman, goes to bed, bosh. This comes from High Chief Tracy Risby, who says, "Ahoy, hoy, Annabelle and Jeff."
Ahoy, hoy.
What is that? A little salutation there? Ahoy, hoy.
You've never heard that before.
Oh, hang on. Wasn't there something about when he invented the telephone, old Alexander Graham Bell, it was what you're supposed to say? Isn't it what Mr. Burns says when he answers the phone on The Simpsons? Hang on, isn't that the way Danny Baker's correspondence?
Hey.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, yeah. I would like to request a podication for my husband, Peter, whose birthday is on the 10th of March, 2 days before you.
Mm.
I wait to get you this year.
Oh, don't get me anything.
I have to get you
no,
something.
No, don't.
I really want to get you something.
I'm actually going to forbid you.
Well, you can't tell me. You can't tell me what to do.
I can, and I am.
Well, I bought you what?
You bought me a lovely Christmas present, which I still haven't used yet.
No, I know. Thanks.
I know. I need to get a babysitter. If anybody wants to babysit for me, that's how desperate I'm getting. I need to get really into babysitter. If you live in like where I live.
all right. Although he is not an official drifter, he is a drifter by osmosis, having listened to me witter on about your show since the Pete and Jeff days. Mm. Those were the days, my friend. He even came to the first live show, blessing me with the gift of someone to talk to avoid any social interaction and small talk. We are both huge Beatles fans, but Pete has an encyclopedic knowledge of all things Beatles, almost on a par with Jeff. We regularly make a pilgrimage to our beloved Liverpool, and Pete regales me with tales of Fourth Lynn Road, Mendips. I hope you've been in both of those places on the National Trust tour. This is Lennon McCartney's childhood homes, or McCartney and Lennon respectively in that order, actually. And they're now owned by the National Trust, and they are wonderful to go in. There's sort of, you have to put a bit of planning into it because they only allow a certain number of people in on any given day on a tour. But I was lucky enough to get a private tour some time ago. And the custodian told me that one of these tours turned up once, like a coach party, a small minibus. Guess who was on it?
Paul McCartney.
With members of the public? No. Because that was, you're thinking of Carpool Karaoke.
Oh,
that
right.
was a TV show. That wasn't a bus tour. They had cameras and everything. And that lad from Gavin and Stacey. You know, the one with the lovely personality.
Yeah.
Never heard a bad word said about that
one.
No. Never. He's apparently got the nicest temperament in the whole of show business. You know, I would often, when I was like doing different things, go in the studios and to make small talk with the technicians, I'd say, who, because this is the question you always want to ask, isn't it? Who is the most delightful person you've ever said? Who's the most delightful?
That's the most interesting.
Yeah, who's the most delightful person you've ever had in here? Without exception, they would say him.
Really?
Yeah, it got boring asking the question.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody that's ever met him has found him nothing but to be a delight.
That's nice.
So Tales of Fourth Lynn Road. Oh, so I didn't even tell you who was on the bus tour.
No, please do.
This is astonishing. Sorry, I but being snidey about a celebrity distracted me.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan.
No.
Yes. He wanted to see the house where John Lennon grew up in, and wanted to see John Lennon's childhood bedroom.
That is so cool.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Walton, Penny Lane, Strawberry Field, the Jacaranda, the Casbah Cuff. The Jacaranda's interesting. The Casbah's interesting. Is it interesting to anybody except me? I'm really trying to think before I go off on one of my tangents. I'm going to do it anyway.
Go
I'm
on.
Do it anyway. So, you're aware of Pete Best?
Yes.
Before the Beatles were at the Cavern, they're place they used to play, even when they were quarrymen for a while, I think, was the Casbah. And the Casbah was a big fancy house in Liverpool, and you know, just outside the city centre, but like a great kind of mansion of a place. And it was owned by Pete Best's mum, Mona, who had a bit of luck on the horses. So she wasn't from money or anything, but she won on the horses. And bought this big house and then opened this club for teenagers in the cellar. So they would play in there, and you can go there. I think it's fully open. They're doing it up as some kind of hotel /B&B. They put a lot of updates on social media of how it's going.
Right, okay.
It's going slowly, I would say.
Okay.
I'd also say, like, I think it looks like it's going to be nice, but maybe the eye of some kind of interior designer you might want an interior designer just to glance across it.
Okay.
Is my advice,
mm-hmm.
should they need it. Anyway, so this Mona Best was ish, like maybe not the Beatles' first manager, but like took over their engagements and really pushed them. And you know, at a time where women often get, you know, their involvement in stories was a bit written out, she was a real pivotal figure, and they kind of liked her, and she was very protective of Pete. And when they booted him out of the band, that caused this rift and so on. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Mona had a lodger, a friend of Pete's, who's a trainee accountant called Neil Aspinall. Neil ended up being the Beatles' road manager. So he was their pal from Liverpool who they took with him, and, you know, him and a guy called Mal drove the van and lifted the speakers and so on. And he was with them right through the 1990s. He was pretty much their closest confidant. Old Mona was having an affair with Pete. Sorry, not with her son. That would be incest.
Neil. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And she had a child by him.
Oh,
so all the time that he's working with the Beatles, you know, in the years they were together, not only is he their their closest and most loyal friend, stroke employee, or whatever, but also he has got a kid with the mother of the drummer they booted out.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
Yes. And where's the kid now?
Well, he's called Rogue. You've met him, actually.
He's called Rogue?
Yes.
Love that.
Yeah. Pete Best came on the radio show, do you remember?
Yes.
And
yes.
Rogue Brooks, Rogue.
Ah.
He's an interesting character. He's got a museum in Liverpool, and it is fantastic if you're like me. I'm not sure like how fantastic it is to your average like American tourist. Because
okay.
It's like things like a carrier bag from the Apple Boutique, oh, or some of John Lennon's garden furniture,
oh,
and loads of stuff from Hamburg. And to me, this is like, oh, look at this stuff. But, you know, it's lots of curios for the real Beatles fan. But he's a bit of a chancer, Pete. It's him who's doing up the old Caspar into a B&B. And
right.
You can go and visit the club and whatever. But it's really, to me, that just the how kind of interwoven it all is, the fired drummer, you know, the man who could have been in the Beatles and was booted out just as they were on the brink of success, that his mum having a kid with their closest confidant. And even though, that relationship must have been very strained, because none of them ever spoke to Pete Best ever again.
Oh, really?
They got Brian Epstein to do the dirty.
Oh.
And eventually he did make money, and a significant amount of money, like seven figures.
Okay.
When the Beatles anthology came out in the 90s,
okay,
they included some tracks from very old tracks, demos and auditions and things. And he got royalties from that. But up until that point, he never really made a penny from them. He'd eked out a living in his life. It's a funny one. It was very bleak at one stage, and then over the years he seems to have had a nice life, and I really liked him when he came on the radio show. He had a glint in his eye, sense of humour about himself, but, you know, nobody's fool either. Why am I saying all this? So they never spoke to him ever again and got Brian Epstein to do the dirty. But at the same time, when they were doing, I think, Sergeant Pepper, there was some medal of hers that John wanted to borrow for the, you know, the Sergeant Pepper uniform on the front. And, you know, Neil asked if they could borrow it, and she let them borrow it. So that's weird as well, isn't it? It's all very odd, like the people left in the wake of the Beatles in Liverpool. But anyway, see, this is very boring for most people, but do you know who it's not going to be boring for? It's not going to be boring for Pete, birthday boy. Yeah. Tracy actually writes, insert gap here for Jeff to fill with more details about the above locations.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes. I'll keep the rest of this brief. As I expect that by now Jeff has gone off on a 10-minute Beatle tangent.
10 minutes?
Was it longer?
I just felt it.
Oh, how I'd love to get Jeff and my Pete in the same room.
Oh.
As a double bonus, we are also Liverpool Football Club fans, so sometimes get to take in the footy on our visits if we're lucky enough to take out a second mortgage for tickets. So, do you have a preference of the two Liverpool teams, Liverpool or Everton? It's the one that you gravitate towards more, like more.
Well, Liverpool are top of the league at the moment. Look at me knowing that. Yeah. So, yeah, Liverpool.
Yeah, me too. I like it. So I don't support any, you know, no interest in footballs. But
footballs,
yeah.
Plural.
But you know who I'll tell you who I support.
Mm.
Jurgen Klopp. Oh. And I know he's leaving Liverpool. Okay. Or he might have left by now. I don't know how long his notice period was.
Right.
But there's something about that guy I like.
The name.
No.
More than that.
Yes.
You just like him.
I've heard him, I've seen clips of him speaking and stuff, and I think, I just like this guy.
Okay.
So in much the same way as I used to support Sven-Göran Eriksson.
Right. Yeah.
I now support Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Just something about that guy. I find him mesmerising.
Really?
Yeah. So, on that theme, I would like to wish Pete a happy 60-something birthday. 60 what, though? We know what it isn't.
Mm.
Otherwise, she would have said, birthday greetings, bottle of wine.
Of course.
Yeah. Pete, you'll never walk alone. Peace and love. Peace and love. Peace and love. If you send him a birthday card after the 21st of November, I am warning you with peace and love, it'll be tossed.
Never forget.
After the 10th of March. Hi, Chief Tracy Risby. So there we go. The latest edition of the podcast, podicated to Pete from Tracy. Happy birthday, Pete. And if you would like a podication, you can email us. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.